after this huge deindustrialization, just destroying all the mines and porcelain factories, had huge unemployment. It created, of course, literally a couple of mafia groups. The crimes were skyrocketing. And the moment it ended was not economic development. The moment it ended, it was Schengen. So opening the borders. People just understood that crime is now not the only option. We can get more money from working in Britain, in Germany, in other European Union countries.
Everyone, welcome back to BungaCast, the global politics podcast at the end of history. I'm Alex O'Healy in São Paulo, Brazil, as usual. Today, I am happy to be joined by Maciej Schlinder, who I will introduce in a second. He's a philosopher, a member of the General Council of the Polish political party Razem, and president of the Polish Basic Income Network. And that should already tell you a little bit about what we're going to be speaking about today. Hello, Maciej. How are you? Where are you joining us from?
Hello, thanks for having me. It's a pleasure for me. Thanks for the invitation. I'm great. After the elections, a lot of things to talk about. Now I'm in Wałbrzych, the place I'm living. Waldenburg, it's in the Lower Silesia region near Wrocław.
Okay, and what's that region like? What is it like to live there?
It's a former mining region, so coal mines and the porcelain factories. Now a place where the transition, Polish transition, 30, 40 years ago, destroyed almost all the industries. That means we are the reindustrialized region after the former regime.
Okay, that's good. I mean, it's not good, but it's interesting because I do want to ask about deindustrialization at some point as we go along this discussion. And we're going to start by talking about Poland's presidential election, which happened over the weekend. We're going to start with that. We're going to move then on to the political party you're a member of, Razem, discuss what its proposals are, what its pitch is. Talk about perhaps a little bit about the European scene and Poland in a European context. Before moving on to Poland's history, particularly what we want to talk about is Poland's post-transition history and the way that I think for a lot of Western liberals, Poland was very important and what its position is now and how it's viewed. And then finally, I think we'll talk a little bit about basic income, which is a topic we've talked a lot about on this podcast over the years, but it's been a little while since we've touched on it, and it'd be interesting to discuss basic income, specifically in the Polish context. So that's what we're going to be talking about. As I just said, Poland went to the polls at the weekend for this presidential election. As I understand it, the president can't set policy, but does have veto power, and obviously has a election of the president will always have an important symbolic role. I want to ask you a little bit about that in just a second. But as I was saying, Poland represents, from my perspective, and I think the perspective of this podcast, probably the one most successful post-communist transition, but also the home of this right populist political challenge. And I think that's interesting because if we think about Poland from the perspective of Western liberals from the late Cold War onwards, Poland's been really important. Poland's been romanticized. They adopted Solidarność and its cause. And then Poland, as far as I was understood and expected to be this beacon of liberal democracy, of economic liberalism, specifically in political democracy, as well as probably social stability under the church, which was held to be, I think, kind of unifying and apolitical figure in Polish society. So I want to ask you what happened. Maybe as a way to get started, this, and forgive me for asking a question which might be too difficult to answer right from the start, but just as a way into this conversation, what does Poland represent to Poles today? If you can answer that, or at least what are different visions of it? Or if it's easier, or in addition to that, if you want to answer what Poland you feel Poland represents for the rest of Europe today?
I think the first question will be a little bit easier, but still not so easy, quite difficult. I think we have, and this presidential election showed us that we have divided society. So Poland, there are more than one Poland's right now. For the part of the society, we are part of the Western Europe, that we should be part of the European Union, but a part that to some extent should accept every policy from the Brussels, like everything that is going inside in Berlin, Paris or Brussels should be accepted, because this part feel to some extent that we are a little bit inferior to the Western part of our continent. The second part wants to be definitely more sovereign, but it means different things, what this sovereignty in fact means. Sometimes it means being anti-Europe, being anti-European Union, which are also two different things. Being anti-Europe and anti-European Union are not exactly, of course, the same. But there is an important, of course, this political thinking about our country as the country or the nation that was always abandoned by the France and always between the main two great imperiums, of course, the Germany and Russia. And in this sense, the main attacks in every Polish elections, parliamentary or presidential, always is accusing the other side of being manipulated by Berlin, manipulated by Moscow, and these kind of things are really important. And to proving that we are not connected to the other imperiums is one of the most important things to show we are the truly Polish sovereign part of the political spectrum. So that's I think what was also a part of this presidential election, which in fact, if I may now go into, was very, very close. That was the second round of the elections. We have two rounds. First was 13 candidates. Now we had these two main candidates, and Karol Nawrocki, who represents Law and Justice, has won just by 1%, and more or less than 2% has won over Rafał Trzaskowski, who is the representative of the Civic Platform, so the liberal. Now he's a mayor of Warsaw, so important politician connected with current government. And Nawrocki was absolutely a new person in Polish politics. Someone like 6 months ago or 12 months ago, almost no one in Poland knew. He was director of Polish Institute of Polish Memory, so a historical, let's say, a historical institute, and not a member of any political party. But because of this decision of the leader of Law and Justice, he became the candidate for the president, and now he finally has won these elections. That means many things to us, because we really, like yesterday, we were not sure who will be the president, and right now we know that. And that means, from one point of view, it means that the political system won't be closed, because the government is liberal and the president is connected to the, let's say, right wing. But the second thing, because this left, right, and liberal in Poland, as in many other countries, are not so as it used to be, so it's not so clear. That means also that, for example, the current government won't be able, for example, to make moves towards the privatization of the healthcare, or that maybe some parts of the investment in infrastructure from the former government could be to some point maintained. On the other hand, that means, of course, because the right-wing politicians are connected and want to show themselves as connected to Donald Trump, to the project of MAGA, of Make Europe Great Again. That means that Trumpism in Europe after these elections, of course, is a little bit stronger than before. So geopolitically, that could be understood as a problem. But the real geopolitical decision for the polls was not exactly Trump or the United States or Europe, because the Civic Platform and the Liberals were not exactly only representing European Union as it is, but the core of European Union. So I would say the German core, the political and, of course, also private connections to many German politicians are quite visible and obvious. And if we understand European Union as having a lot of troubles and problems because of the leadership of Germany, that also means that our liberals are close to those that are to some extent responsible for the problems of European Union as it is.
Fantastic. Well, that sets up beautifully. I particularly like that point about the way that in Polish self-conception, there's this token of sovereignty, which has such important symbolic weight, Poland understanding itself as squished between Germany and Russia. And it is interesting. I mean, we have commented on this podcast in respect of other countries in the region, the way that for the kind of more sovereigntist political forces, that one would think that they would want to pursue their own path. But obviously the figure of Trump represents something potentially contradictory there, in which they want to align more closely to the US and therefore follow a more Atlanticist road, which would kind of run against a more sovereigntist vision. Anyway, these things play out in various different crisscrossing ways, and it's quite interesting to try to unpick them in each country. We're going to come on to this in just a second. I wanted to ask you if you could spell out for those who aren't familiar with Polish politics. I think I would suspect that even those who aren't familiar would have come across some of these figures or political parties. Civic Platform, which is so closely associated to Donald Tusk, and I think people will know Donald Tusk for being the leading EU anti-populist, I guess, probably together with Belgium's Guy Verhofstadt. So this figure will have appeared before, and I mean, I think certainly for British listeners, you know, over the whole Brexit experience, Tusk emerged as obviously this very strong anti-Brexit voice. And then on the other hand, Law and Justice is kind of, if I'm not mistaken, perhaps the kind of original dangerous conservative populists on the European scene, certainly in Central or Eastern Europe. So I guess these are parties or figures which are familiar. And of course, the Kaczynski twins, of which there's only one remaining, they themselves also kind of, I think, have had a significant profile. Is there another way you can kind of describe this political duopoly, and how did they campaign in this presidential election?
Both of those parties and both of the leaders of those parties, so Kaczynski and Tusk, of course, they originate from the post-Solidarność movement in the 1990s. So in the 1990s, at some point, they were quite close. They were on the same side of the political division. The second side was the post-socialist, post-communist party, now in a different name. Now it's called New Left, but also then it was a Left Democratic Alliance. But after some huge mistakes going on, let's say, third wave, Blairist, Schroederist decisions, all of the power, and the new created division in the Polish scene originates from the Solidarność movement. Part is definitely liberal, that's the Tusk. He is from Gdańsk, so from the coast, from the group of Gdańsk liberals. They were important figures in the moment of transition and the decisions connected with deindustrialization, with having this shock therapy, the decisions by Balcerowicz. This is the same group. And the second one, more nationalist, more Catholic, but also to some extent, maybe because of also connection to church, a little bit socially aware and socially in sense of social policy. And that is especially important why we can think about the right-wing populists as partly the only ones that make that made any moves towards a proper welfare state in our country. The main thing was in 2015, they introduced a child benefit, quite high. First, it was not universal, but then quite quickly became universal for all children. And that was a huge, important social change in our country. That meant that a lot of families in months, for the first time in their life, could go for holidays to the coast. For the first time, they didn't felt inferior. They could walk on their, especially small cities, with their friends, laughing and just living in a way that we assume in bigger cities that is normal. That was something that I think no member of this liberal side truly understand and truly appreciate to understand how the power of minds is to some extent in the hands of the leader of law and justice. The second thing was a very important one, also putting the retirement age towards it was before. So the Tusk civic platform decided to make retirement age at 67 for women and men, and now we have, as it was before, 60 for women and 65 for men. That is, these two things in every Polish elections are part of the discussion. If the liberals will win, they will destroy the child benefit and they will prolong the retirement age. Mm. These are very important social arguments why, as a leftist, as a socialist, you could be in some kind of debate, being not in any of those two parts of the scene, mm-hmm. Saying that we are not them and not them, we are the third option, and having mainly the same distance towards both of it. So right, being a leftist doesn't mean to be against right-wing populism, because it has the social elements. And to tell the truth, when we are you use this expression of Donald Tusk as an anti-populist and anti-populism politician, I could say that he is a populist, but in a different way. He's a liberal populist per se. And many very populist, let's say, words during the campaign were exactly those completely not true statements about the economy, about state minimum, about lowering taxes, about everything that private is better than public. And this is we are dealing with two populisms, just different kind of populism. And that was the understanding of the situation of my party. And we, for in this election, we had our own candidate that was very clearly attacking the government, but not, of course, also, but attacking also the law and justice former government. So keeping the distance, the same distance to both of those main. And that was a strategy that gave Adrian Zandberg almost 5% in the elections, which is quite a good result, because we have never had such a result as a party in the polls. And now, after the elections, our polls are more or less close to the result of the Adrian Zandag during the presidential elections. And this is the moment to maintain being not being pushed into any of those two sides of the political spectrum. That's
yeah, perfect.
Which is not, of course, an easy task.
No, indeed. I think Poland really does represent, as well as anywhere else does, this fusion between technocracy and populism, both in terms of form and content. So I find that quite interesting. And often that polarity plays out more on kind of cultural terms and orientations than in the real kind of substance. I wanted to ask you about, in respect of this election, before we move on to kind of wider questions, there seemed to be, at least this is in the New York Times reporting of the election, that there was a surge in support for anti-establishment candidates in the first round, particularly from the young. 70% of the young, I think the under 30s, voted for anti-establishment candidates, particularly for libertarian candidate. So does this suggest a tendency, a move away from this duopoly, that people are searching for kind of other solutions, and where are they looking for them if they are?
They are, and definitely the third candidate, Sławomir Mentzen, who represents Confederacy, that's the name of the party. He is a real, truly right wing politician. He's not only a libertarian, but he's also a religious fundamentalist. So his party is right, far right in every sense you could imagine. But of course, yes, that was, I think, to some extent, especially from the younger part of the voters, a very important sign of not accepting the duopoly, of being tired of those the two main parties. And that was also part of this anti-duopoly movement, got to Razem, so a completely different one. But there was voters, there were a lot of younger voters who were just hesitating voting for Zandberg and voting for Mentzen. So completely different figures, absolutely at the opposite side in every political question, they would answer completely differently, but they are not part of the duopoly, and that's why they both had quite a good results. Unfortunately, one of those also anti-establishment figures, Grzegorz Braun, ended as a fourth one, and he is in fact kind of a monarchist, anti-Semitic, pro-Russian. So, say, not only far right, but to some extent lunatic part of the political scene. But yes, that was the elections that both main representatives of both main parties got only 60% of votes. So 40% of people said no to this duopoly we have since 2005.
So this is interesting because this is also on the back of increasing turnout. I think I'm right in saying Poland has had very low political participation since the 1990s, very low party membership. Trade union membership is also relatively low. I think it's something like 10%. And participation rates have been under 50% for everything from regular elections to constitutional referenda, which tend to actually generate higher turnouts in many more contested situations. And yet turnouts have been low. And yet it seems that in recent elections, and particularly this one, turnout was relatively high. I think the first round was 67%. I couldn't find figures for the election over the weekend. Is that a significant change?
It was more than 70, I think 72, as far as I remember. But yes, it is changing. And the most important is that the young people between 18 and 29, the turnout was even greater, like 75 or 76%, which is a completely new thing for us. But it is not these elections, but also the elections 2023, so the parliamentary ones, that were definitely the elections against the former government, the law and justice government that changed the abortion law to make it more strict. Was full of cronyism and a lot of bad decisions. And a lot of people just went to the polls thinking that after these 8 years of governing by law and justice, the change is something indispensable. The problem why now they also voted in the elections, but they voted completely differently, is because the government didn't deliver on its promises at all. It's one of those governments that is losing popularity every month. So, like, for example, the Labour Party in England just after the elections, also a huge, many that promises. Bad, huh? Exactly. And they didn't deliver the promises connected with the cultural things, so LGBTQ rights and abortion laws, but they also didn't deliver on any other things, and they stopped to some extent the investment processes, especially connected with the central communication part, which was the main investment project of law and justice. But it was connected to law and justice, but in fact it had a huge, and it still has a huge popularity in Poland. It's an airplane, an airport in building a very big airport in the middle of Poland, but also connecting this airport and the whole country by railroads and by new trains. In case of infrastructure, in case of communication, that is a very important thing. And the new government was against it from the beginning. And now, just before the elections, they were trying to show that they won't stop it, but they, in fact, didn't do anything after winning. So that's the thing that people see. And all those moral elements were also not delivered. They were supposed to put the end to cronyism, and it's exactly at the same level as it was before. So they lost also the moral right to some extent, show that they are in any sense better or different than the former regime, former government. So that was the main reason why, in fact, Karol Nawrocki yesterday has won. Absolutely terrible government, which you could also see in things that you, like most of the people, every, like daily, interact. First of all, the healthcare, which you must wait for the longest time, for like 15 years, to get to the specialist, to get your operation. We have a hugely underfunded system of healthcare, and they even wanted to give it less, but the former president, current president, just vetoed a law that would take money from the system of healthcare. And the second thing, the second problem, because these are the main internal problems, healthcare and housing, public housing, more or less 2 to 3 million houses is lacking in Poland, and the prices, especially in bigger cities like Wrocław, Poznań, or also Warsaw, are completely over the possibilities of most of the young people to get it. So they are paying 50-60% of the wages just to pay the rent and to live anywhere.
Yeah, and no, that's extremely high, yeah.
This government didn't, first of all, didn't propose any serious public housing project, but also, finally, it didn't deliver, but wanted to propose another regulation helping to get the cheaper credit, bank loan. that usually, of course, makes a higher demand, but without higher supply, that also made the prices go up.
Okay, let's move on to your political party, Razem, and what its proposal are. Let's start with that. How does it situate itself on the political spectrum and with regard to other parties of the left?
We could understand ourselves that we are kind of a social democratic or socialist party. We are, in fact, probably both. Our members, I sometimes joke that if our members live in Spain, we'll be in five different parties, in France also in six different parties, because there's no party on the left of our party. So we have kind of a strict socialist elements, but also because the other, let's say, left party is still kind of third way social liberal party, the post-communist one. That means that true social democrats are also in our small party. So we have this kind of attention.
Interesting. I mean, so the person who recommended you for this is a friend of the podcast, Pavel Krismarski, who said, well, you should have Maciej on, and he's a member of this political party, which is basically the only left-wing political party in Poland. And I don't really know, you know, how fragmented or not the political party scene is in Poland. So obviously, there aren't that many political parties, it seems. I'm saying this from a country which has, you know, like 35 different political parties. So these things are always relative. This is not also the United States. It's like, you know, where there's one, effectively. Yeah, it's interesting that you know that there's basically no other party to its left.
Yeah, yeah. Of course, there are some very small ones, but they can't get even half of the percent votes. And in the end, they are not starting in the elections. They can't collect the signatures to start, so they are not important. To this extent, we are the only left not connected to the liberals, because the new left right now is part of the government, and a very small part of the government. That means that they truly can't really push any of the agenda inside the government. That means they are needed for the government to survive. That means they are taking everything, every attack for themselves, but not showing what they could do from leftist agenda. They are not delivering almost anything. That's the thing. The important parts that we tried to show during this campaign, because we, in the last elections, parliamentary elections, both of those parties I mentioned, so our, Razem, and the New Left, we were a coalition, so we started together. And after some time, they decided to join the government, and we decided to stay in an opposition, so we split. And that meant that we also had different candidates for the president. And our was a little bit better, 0.5% more than Magdalena Biejat, that was the representative of the new left. The main thing we are, in fact, during this campaign and a couple of months before the campaign also, emphasizing mainly the thing of investments, more investment in healthcare. We have spent only around 6% of GDP on healthcare. It's one of the lowest numbers in Europe. We need at least 8% to make it working. Housing, public housing, a huge project of public housing. So the second problem I was mentioning before. And also a project of reindustrialization by investing in chemical and pharmaceutical and other factories in the country. That was the thing that was not perceived as a leftist per se. That was something that caused a lot of people that perceived themselves as right wing or centrist vote for Adrian Zandberg, because they understood we want a country that is investing in its future in a way it should be. That's why we sometimes can have this link to a broader group that is not exactly agreeing with us in some kind of elements of cultural policies, but in this sense, they are on the same side as us.
Well, I guess that's telling about left, in which, you know, elements which would be understood as standard kind of, I guess, developmentalist programs or demands for investment would be seen as being not left-wing today. I guess It's indicative of the left's anti-productivist kind of green bias, perhaps. In any case, I think that's revealing about the Polish political context in a way that is, I think, familiar to those elsewhere, whether it's in Western Europe or indeed even in South America. So who votes for Razem at the moment? I mean, you mentioned that voters, which would be traditionally more of the center and right, were won over. Certain voters who fit that description were won over by these demands for investment. Pete, where do voters come from who's voting for the party?
We still don't have the detailed data to exactly answer this question. But first part of the answer is young people vote for Razem. Adrian Zandberg and also our party is constantly getting more support from the younger generation, 18 to 39 as well. Usually the older ones, they just don't know us still at all. That is kind of a problem. Still, we are trying, and to some extent it is successful. But still, we have definitely better results in bigger cities, the academic ones. If you check the votes of people in the universities, definitely we are first or the second party there. That means that to some extent we also are perceived as a kind of meritocratic party that just understands some processes. But that's one of those problems. We still cannot. We are trying, and to some extent there are some successes, especially in these elections. But we are at the beginning of the on the way to get the workers back to the left. Still, most of the workers just understand that the ones that could give them anything was and is still Law and Justice, because they proved it could be. First, this child benefit. Second, some kind of some elements connected with the retirement age. And third, also the minimum wage, which was taken care better, of course, in comparison to the liberals.
And I guess we can surmise, I mean, I'm surmising here from just some basic data, but the working class probably largely didn't vote in Poland. Given the low turnout figures, I would imagine that to be the case. I mean, just by the tendency that middle class, upper middle class tend to vote in higher proportion in most countries, when turnout was kind of 40% or something like a decade ago. Imagine a lot of workers simply weren't voting. And if turnout now has increased to something like 70%, that's a lot of workers, particularly young workers, who are involved in formal political participation in a way that they weren't.
Yes, but I think it was the case. It was the case that, of course, the workers voted a little bit. The turnout was worse. But I think it is changing right now. It is changing as well. But also in this anti-establishment version, that means they are voting both, to some extent, of course, for us, but in, unfortunately, bigger numbers, they are also voting for the far-right libertarians, even if their interests are completely contradictory to their political program. But years and years of neoliberal mainstream education, economic education, and all the main media was just saying the same neoclassical neoliberal stuff That meant that a lot of workers still in Poland think that with lower taxes and more economic freedom, they could be better off, which is not true, but they just didn't. In fact, of course, we also, as you mentioned, the unions are not strong in Poland. We have only like more or less 10-12% of the workers are members of unions. So we have no, labor is not organized in a way that could rule the minds of workers. Mm.
And this is interesting. I mean, the percentage of workers in the labor force in manufacturing is still reasonably high. I mean, I think it's 25%. Is that right?
I don't remember the exact, but yeah, it could be.
Something like that. I mean, yeah, so there's still a substantial share in manufacturing, and yet, yeah, unionization is obviously very, very low. I want to come on to these issues are something I guess we'll touch on when we talk about basic income in just a bit. But I don't know if there's anything else you want to highlight in terms of RASM, and if there's a specific constituency that RASM is seeking to speak for, or is it a kind of speak on a more general basis?
Of course, our goal is to create this constituency of workers fighting for themselves. So we are just part of the traditionally meant left, but to redesign, recreate it in a situation like now in Poland and in any other countries as well, it's extremely difficult. So it won't be possible in the nearest years, but I think we are getting closer to this result.
Okay, let's move on then to the history of the past 35 years. By some estimates, only a minority of former Eastern Bloc countries have had a successful transition and progress at fall of communism. You have Branko Milanovic's famous calculation of looking quite basically at real GDP growth since 1990. And there's very few countries which come off well at all. But Poland is the one that comes off best. It has had an average growth of above 3% per annum over the course of that period. So, I mean, in a world of low growth in which we've become accustomed to low growth, what accounts for Poland's success such as it is?
To some extent, the links with German economy. A lot of industrial connections and a lot of also personal connections made us, for example, not really suffer huge problems during the crisis of 2008. That meant that we are, as it was called, green up, green. We didn't suffer countries of the Mediterranean did. But the GDP is one of the variables and one of the numbers that we could look at, but still are about an economy which is based on higher exploitation. If you look at the numbers of wage share in GDP, then Poland is since 1990s, one of those of the last ones in the European Union. That means that a lot of the progress, a lot of economic progress, was built on the expense or against, in fact, workers, and the inequalities in Poland also have risen, increased a lot quicker and greater than in countries like Czech Republic, for example, or Hungary. Now, that meant that there is a cost of this economic development, and it's a social cost.
Well, I mean, the figures on even regional inequality are surprising. I mean, it's something like Western Poland is close enough to the EU average, below it, but close enough to it, whereas Eastern Poland is one of the poorest regions in the entire EU. And I guess that is one way of capturing that inequality. I mean, how have Poles understood the past 30 years economically? I mean, is it understood as one of kind of success, even if things personally become maybe a little bit more challenging in one way or another? Or
it is perceived as a success, but not for everyone. And this geographical division you mentioned is very important, because when you look at the map and map of votes in almost all elections, the northern and western part usually votes for the Civic Platform, and eastern and southern part votes for Law and Justice. And that is the result of, first, of course, cultural division. The church is materially more powerful in eastern part of Poland, but also Law and Justice also made that shift to put much more money to the eastern part of Poland. The idea of development by Civic Platform before 2015 was to put as much money as possible in a couple of big cities and to create European cities like Poznan, Wrocław, and Warszawa that we can be proud of. And if they will be developed, then probably this that will be this trickle-down effect towards smaller cities and other parts of Poland. It didn't, of course, it couldn't happen, and it didn't happen. Law and Justice just turned it around. And sometimes without any meritocratic, any transparent systems, they just decided to put personally part of the funding towards the eastern part, eastern cities, smaller ones, smaller eastern regions of Poland. And that, to some extent, created a situation where you can't really get out of this division, because the people remember that me, my friends, my family, everyone in our city just benefited because of this government, and we suffered under the second one. And it's in some extent a huge difference. That means that these inequalities, regional inequalities, during the Law and Justice time was to some extent decreased. Now it's getting worse again.
Right, interesting. I wanted to ask about emigration. I don't want to spend too much on it, but as someone who lived in London for a long time, I've encountered many Poles in London, and I understand that's reversed, but I don't know if that's just a flux between the UK and Poland, or if that applies to immigrants as a whole. How is that? Is that a factor in Polish politics at all?
Yes, definitely. Immigration is an important part. I'll just tell you a small story about my city. I'm just living right now. Wałbrzych, after this huge deindustrialization, just destroying all the mines and porcelain factories, had huge unemployment. It created, of course, literally a couple of mafia groups. The crimes were skyrocketing. And the moment it ended was not economic development. The moment it ended, it was Schengen. So opening the borders. People just understood that crime is now not the only option. We can get more money from working in Britain, in Germany, mm-hmm. in other European Union countries. And we don't have money to rob now, because we have rubbed last couple of years. So immigration was an important element of social structure in Poland. Now, during the Law and Justice rules, I think that this a lot of people get back to Poland, and we don't have as many immigrants as we had after 2007. So after getting to Schengen. The other problem, and this is also part to link to the beginning of our, we have this, let's say, immigration problem connected with, of course, a lot of refugees from Ukraine, the war. And at the beginning, a lot of Poland and most of Polish society was definitely very solidaristic, and we were, to some extent, one, we are not divided in this sense. But after some time, if you don't have developed social services enough, if you have problems with healthcare and problems with public housing and other social services, people start understanding this problem. Okay, it's so bad because I'm not getting it. Probably they are getting it. So those this million or more of immigrants. Of course, it's not true. But if you are, you don't have enough resources, and you are taking a lot of immigrants in this situation, of course, you are creating a situation that when it is not well handled, you have those tensions between Polish and Ukraine people. And that's main element, or I think main cause of a very good result of Grzegorz Braun, so this fourth far right.
The kind of crazy monarchist, right.
Exactly. He was also very openly anti-Ukrainian in the sense, and it was, you couldn't imagine that such a guy could get so many votes 3 or 4 years ago. Now it was a surprise, but not so big.
Okay, now I want to move on to basic income, but apologies for jumping around. I would be remiss, though, if I didn't ask you a little bit about the geopolitical context, especially given the kind of interests and concerns of this podcast. Under the banner of multipolarity, of course, these things are, the kind of tensions are pulling countries in different directions. And it's not easy to read from the outside what, for example, US-China geopolitical competition will play out like in Poland, for example. Now, that's not what I want to ask specifically. I did want to ask you more with reference to what you mentioned at the beginning about Poland always having this self-conception of being squeezed between two imperiums, between Germany or the EU now and Russia on the other side, and of always being very pro-American, one of the most pro-American European countries, how the return of Trump is playing out. I mean, I know you've already made some reference to it, but I'm interested in how Poland is positioning itself geopolitically, and if this is a subject of political contestation in, for example, last weekend's election or in general.
To some extent, both of the main parties are trying to show they have good relationships with Donald Trump and his administration. Because, as you said, Polish society is extremely pro-American. It has been for years. And Law and Justice, probably the most successfully, shows it is the Trump party in Poland. Mm. But the Confederacy, the libertarian far-right ones, also present themselves as those that have the closest in the agenda, because they are more libertarian. And if you think about Elon Musk, of course, and part of the agenda of Donald Trump, of course, they have rights to claim that. But also Donald Tusk, who is the prime minister, also is trying to show not only as a leader, a European leader, but also making a lot of moves showing that Donald Trump is important figure for him. For example, important part of the elections was, and before, this government was showing that we will have a huge deregulation process. But this deregulation process was not proposed or handled by the prime minister. He just picked one of the most the richest Polish guys, private billionaire, and just, okay, the prime minister asked him to do this job. it's your part. It's not the democratically chosen representative. He's just a friend of the prime minister that he's in fact, a billionaire. And he is responsible now for all the deregulation projects of the current government. So Tusk wanted to have Polish Elon Musk on his side. And they are not really openly attacking Trump in any way. The new left is trying to do that to attack Trump. This is one of the very few moments they are trying to show they are different from the liberal part of the government, but it's not a very important effect.
Okay, excellent. I would like to discuss that more, but we don't have that much time. So I figure we'll move on to basic income. And regular listeners to this podcast will know that we've discussed this a number of times. I don't want to rehearse here, mainly because of reasons of time, all the arguments for and against basic income. I wanted to ask you more specifically about the Polish context and what your argument, what case you would make for basic income, specifically in the Polish context.
I think, as usually, the debate about basic income in Poland is just not so developed as in countries like Brazil, Spain, or the UK. But the very important moment when Polish people started thinking about basic income as something that is not completely strange or abstract was exactly this child benefit introduced by the Law and Justice government. Because the main attacks, main arguments against this child benefit were exactly the same as those against basic income. So first of all, we can't afford it. Second, people that will get money, the poor people that will get money, will waste it for alcohol, drugs, and this kind of thing. That people will stop working because they will get money for free from the government. And all those arguments, of course, turned out to be not true. The economy developed in a quicker way. Definitely, people spent the money they got on children in a different way, but on children they didn't waste it. And there was no effect or no negative effect on working. So the main arguments were just proved to be wrong. That meant that we could use it to say, okay, we created this child benefit. Of course, basic income is something definitely bigger, definitely more substantial. So, but still, you don't have to be so afraid. And at that point, we were closer to create, for example, an experimental pilot project. We prepared this kind of pilot project at the northern part of Poland, near the border with Russia. We were negotiating financing from the European Commission, but in the end they decided not to fund us, and the project never realized. It was in 2020 to 22. So in the end we are not having a pilot project, but maybe at some point we will.
So how has the argument for basic income fared also in light of unemployment? Because Poland, as I understand it, used to have very high unemployment, something like, you know, it peaked at 20% in 2002, and now is much lower, it's around kind of 5 to 6% and has been for the past years. Has that impacted the debate on basic income, whether positively or negatively?
Not so much. Let's say that the unemployment is not perceived as an important problem in Poland for a couple of years. It starts to be, because we have exactly this year, we have a lot of collective redundancies, definitely more than we used to have in former years. Still, we can't see it in a number in employment figures, but the situation is changing. The main problem is how what kind of jobs there are, and as I told you about exploitation, people usually think, okay, we don't have high unemployment, but the jobs are not good enough.
Are they low paid or are they also precarious?
Both. Not so precarious as it used to be, because now we don't have this kind of figures that we had in 2010 or 12. I think we were the second or the third in Europe in case of short-term precarious contracts in Europe. But now the situation, of course, also after law and justice, situation has improved in that regard. But still, the wages are okay, they are higher, but still not increasing in a way they should when we look at the GDP, the growth of the GDP. So unemployment is not the main context of basic income. The second, in fact, the problem with the basic debate in Poland lately, last like 2 years, was the problem of inflation. Of course, you have to accept that such a huge transfer tax reform, which is taking some money from the richer and giving it to all, but in fact, of course, the benefiting group is the poorer and the middle class. It had to have this effect to some extent of higher inflation. And if you say, okay, but it's not so high as you fear, when you have 2% inflation or 5% inflation, okay, after basic income, you probably have 7 or 8. That's acceptable. But if you have 16% inflation, you don't want to add another 2 or 3 because people are already tired of any inflation as they experience it every day. So that was kind of a problem of promoting basic income last 2-3 years.
Right. Okay. I guess finally, I mean, is this a plank of Razem party, or is this something that the party is pushing?
No, basic income? Not really. In this case, we have more or less 3 groups. Part of the party is basic income supporters. Part of the party is job guarantee supporters, and the probably biggest part is just developing social services and thinking we should create a welfare state as in good days of Scandinavian countries. That's the, let's say, the line of thinking. So there is no agreement on this side inside our party.
Right, okay. Well, it's interesting. I mean, I guess the good old days of Scandinavian social democracy end up the kind of gleam of the left side across most countries, other than maybe in Scandinavia. I don't know. All right, Maciej, is there anything that we should be looking out for, finally, to conclude this, coming up in Poland or Poland's relations with other countries that you think that people outside of Poland should be keeping an eye on?
I think in the nearest future, definitely the government would have a lot of problems, and I think it could collapse quicker than it should be by the legal standards. So next 2 years will be very interesting in good and bad way, of course. So you could have a lot of information from Poland in the next couple of months and couple of years, just like Donald Trump creates new news every day. Poland is not as developed as Donald Trump in this regard, but to some extent you could expect a little bit of that.
All right, fantastic. That's a great place to leave it. Maciej, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.